Hey everyone, just wanted to kind of give you a heads up. We had some challenges when we were recording. Brian and I tried to record on Tuesday, but LT was not able to make it. So then we kind of did a little bit of our riffs there. But then whenever the next day LT and Brian could record, I couldn't. And so this is kind of going to be a little stranger, you know, than you probably are used to podcasts. But basically, I kind of just cut in, you know, what me and Brian had talked about to what, you know, LT and Brian's recording. So it can probably sometimes it'll kind of like, you know, you'll kind of hear either a pause or just kind of like a weird kind of didn't quite seem like it, you know, synced up, but everything's there. We went through most of the sauces, but you know, it's not really, you know, laid out like you're used to. But anyways, I hope you enjoy our comments and wanted to just let you know.
Hey guys, it's Jenna Elfman from Fear the Walking Dead. I play Laura. No, I play Naomi. No, I play June. I play June on Fear the Walking Dead. And you're listening to the Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through on Talk Through Media.
That was awesome.
Hey, I'm Lindsley Register and I play Laura on The Walking Dead. You're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through on Talk Through Media.
Hey, survivors, welcome to episode 75 of Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
And I'm LT.
And we're still calling this Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through because we got some feedback on Fear the Walking Dead from last week, but most of it is going to be covering World Beyond season 1, episode 9 and 10. Episode 9, The Deepest Cut, and Episode 10, In This Life. So before we get started, we have feedback from last week's episode. So let's...
We can talk about it.
Done talking. Time to listen.
And Kyle doesn't do that, but he should. But anyway, so before this... Just so you know, listeners, this is kind of a weird situation this week. LT wasn't available to record with us last night, and Kyle is not available to record with us tonight. So normally we record Tuesday nights. So Tuesday night, LT wasn't available, and we were like thinking we really need him to talk about World Beyond. So we held off that discussion. But... we did talk about like Aaron's feedback and some of the stuff that we had and a little bit about World Beyond, but we figured we'd hold off until tonight to talk to LT and kind of mishmash them together. But this has been further complicated because Kyle's not available tonight. So the only constant in this episode this week is me. If you hear my name, or you hear, I should say, if you heard my voice, you'll know I was here for both Kyle and LT. It's been a rarity this season, but that's the case this week. So
Brian is our anchor.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Aaron from the internet.
Who else would it be?
Exactly.
I'm kidding, Aaron. Yeah, we appreciate your feedback.
Yes. No, it definitely is. Like, this is what we like enjoy, that we actually get this from the blog, which is nice.
So. Yeah.
All right. Well, Aaron goes on and says, we don't know if that was on purpose or if maybe this actor is Kobe Minifee's stunt double. This was a quote from us. And she was like, stunt double is my guess because I totally thought for a few opening seconds, this was Virginia with them.
So did I. Yes. That was my exact take. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, actually, it's like, I had it in my notes and then you guys kind of like, oh, no. Like, we're like, that's, you know, we thought that too, but I literally have my notes just like, what the hell is, like, where did Virginia go? It's like, she ran away and like, everybody's like dying and this and that, like, where was she? And I'm like, yep. It was her, and or you know, it was a stunt double. So very confusing. to say
I really do expect, what's her name? Samuels, I think.
Yeah.
I really do expect there to be a scene later on in the season where Samuels gets shot when someone, you know, takes a shot out, tries to kill Ginny and it's Samuels instead. It's written there. It's, you know, it's like the easiest layup in the history of basketball, you know. Yeah.
Nope, totally agree. And if we see that, it's like that's where they were going with that.
Yeah,
obviously. All right, well, she goes on. She's Lisa telling Morgan off was the best part of their reunion. Yep,
I knew you would like that.
onto the podcast. I mean, let's be real honest, Brian. Alicia hasn't had much to do since like season 3, if we're honest, but certainly post season 4A, they've really been using her for name only because they don't give her anything to do, sadly. She gets like one episode where she's the focus of every 15th episode show, and that episode is very hit or miss because of how they handled her. She either just stands around or just like she's a glimpse of the Alicia we remember. I don't know if it's just the writers don't know how to use the character like her, who has a clear set of ideals or for what she will and won't do, or if it's just choosing to ignore her because she might talk about the history before Morgan came. But they really do feel like they've just keeping around to cash in on Alicia's fame so they don't get backlash from killing the last Clark.
And of course, Alicia with a Y and Alicia with an I. But I don't know. I agree with you to a certain extent. Certainly, post season 4A, I would agree with you. The real exception I can think of was the one where she kind of had PTSD from killing all those radioactive walkers. You know, that was the one where we got to see her shine. And after that, definitely, but I would also say in the time before that, like season 4B and before that in season 5A, there hasn't been a lot of that, you know, warrior queen type of Alicia that, you know, we love. And it's funny because she wasn't that character at all the first two seasons. That came out in season 3. So it's worth saying that too.
Yeah, no, and I have to agree in the part though. It's like I remember back in season 2 where before I even like joined on the podcast where I was just like, "Oh, like my comments were like, "Oh, Alicia, she got like skills. Like she went up to like got a skill increase or whatever." It's like when she had that butterfly knife. You know, it's like we saw her being like this becoming a very formidable, like, I don't know, dealing with like the situations that within the Clark setting and like all this other stuff. And I remember in season 2.
Right.
But then it's like, yeah, season 3, she got a lot of like, you know, development, and she was kind of almost a force to be reckoned with, or also like, hey, this character, like, she's strong. She might not be show it all the time, but she, you know, she was going against, you know, Otto and like, you know, her mom and being like trying to figure out her own way naturally with, yeah. So we saw her growth and like that kind of stuff. But then we get to season 4 and it kind of like went a little, I don't know, like the first half was probably good because we got to see some of the flashbacks, like, you know, with the stadium, and now we get to hear that she wanted to go back to the stadium. So I don't know. I'm like, I think they lost a very big opportunity to use their character to make something better and like be strong and like, you know, everything can't be all about Strand. Strand's not the only one that can be like, oh, he's the most like crazy, like, or like, you know, like can calculate or like whatever. It's like, no, it's like he's one of them, but the fact that they didn't pair them up or like we saw more interaction about like this plan or whatever, I think that would have been a bigger payoff than just, you know, where we're seeing it at this point. I don't know.
I agree.
Yep. All right. Well, continue on with Aaron. She says, again, Alicia can be just as conniving as Strand, just as good-hearted as John, and just as violent as June or Morgan, so it's not like that she can't be in more scenes and showcase those abilities away. I will just say that my comment before, I did not read this, so I think, like, Aaron, you were reading my mind. And then she continues, maybe this is a product also of too many characters on, but still, it seems newbies get more screen time than the original now. And despite the fact that Alicia is listed first in the credits, she said, quotes, when checking the information guy, you rarely see her. Maybe they need to bring in some season 2 and 3 writers just for Alicia because she did things back then. Give her scenes in every episode, at least. If we can do it for new characters, we can do it for her. And when she has a focus episode, actually applies at least one of her abilities, because could replace Alicia with a sack of potatoes and the episode would turn out the same way. They are wasting Alicia Denham-Kara's talents and continue to insult fans with their treatment of handling. If not for the fact that she plays Alicia Clark, who is the original character we love and who is the last original concept of the series, I would say let this poor woman go because you're not doing her anything with her. It's really easy money for Alicia, I'm sure, as she honestly just has to stand there with this writing, but it has been so boring compared to what she's used to do.
Well, I mean, she never had, I know the show that you're talking about, the one, but she never was a full-time character on there. She was a recurring. So this is her first, you know, full-time role, and they're not, you know, it's rare to get a role that is, you know, now going to be 7 seasons, and she's going to be, you know, there the whole time. And I think at, you know, this point they've had, how many have they had at this point?
Episodes or?
Yeah, they're up to 76 episodes. So they're going to be pretty close to 100 episodes by the end of season 7. So now that I am doing the math, they will be, if they do another 16 for season 7, they will be at 101 episodes. So, you know, that, and 101 episodes is good because that also lets them go into syndication, you know. So, I mean, that's not as big of a thing as it used to be, but there's still, you know, a TV station somewhere that will play Fear the Walking Dead reruns, and you know, they get money for that. So
yeah,
and it's good money.
We'll see, because I'm like, I can understand the fact that it's like they are trying to kind of, like, they were building this season about, like, oh, we're going to kind of focus more on characters and the pairs and this and that. So I can see where it's like, okay, the first half was basically building on that. And then the last half will be like, okay, that's when we start getting everybody back together. And then maybe we'll get a little bit more from Alicia and this and that. So I'm like, yes, I wanted more Alicia when she was even in her own episodes that they gave her. But I'm hoping that they'll do more, because if they don't, then yeah, they're not going to be like, okay, yeah, you guys just wasted this whole wonderful character, this wonderful actress, you know, like, and everything she's been doing for this whole entire show. But I can see where there's like, okay, maybe it's like, oh, we got to kind of like build and like bring all the characters back together, give them all their individual episodes, or like, you know, like whatever, some of them come into the others, but then the back half is going to be where, you know, there's the big battle, everybody comes together, we see Alicia do some or like cool stuff that, well, you know, like whatever, be more of a character. So we'll see. I mean, I just, that's all I have to say. I hope that's what this is, why we're sitting there like, hey, we wanted more and you wasted it, to being like, okay, well, then I hope you're thinking about the last half, like thinking more about it. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, she continues on. She's like, quote, well, since she's into
sibling aside,
Charlie may be the person for the job. She said, oh, snap, LT. Harsh but funny, smiley face. Speaking of family violence, did the story Dakota told about Virginia killing her parents remind anyone of Chris and how he got all pussy post his mom dying? Do you think this could be a repeat of what Virginia had to kill the parents of Dakota safely, but all Dakota sees is she killed them without her mind trying to save them? Hopefully Dakota won't be as annoying as Chris is so far. It's part season 4 and part of season 5. Quote, that's the thing though, Brian. That's how they are with her. It may be good, and she says, see episode 2 this season, and it may be bad this episode, but it's always spaced out, and again, I think that's part of what they need to solve. And she's talking about Alicia. She says Alicia is original, but she's treated like some special guest star. Smile or sad face. They need to show her the same screen time respect they show Strand and Morgan and everyone else. I completely agree with that.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that her absence is one of the negatives, I'd say, in this particular season. So,
yep. All right. She continues. Alicia bargaining with Virginia. Brian is what I mean by she can be versatile too, and it's just good to see that she'll do one push to points. Alicia, who has saved everyone if I can, was willing to condemn Dakota to free her and Charlie, and so you get some good character stuff there. You could do more with that also if they just used Alicia more, but they don't seem to do that for some odd reason. Smile or sad face. Does she feel regret about that, or would she do it again? Has she not been stopped? She is doing it because it's true to her choice, or because she made at Strand, and how does she feel that if it was Strand saying it her way? Alicia's more than a stand-in writer. Do better with her.
I think I'm going to take over, Kyle, if that's okay.
All right.
If only Madison would show up. Heart. You're anything but consistent.
Yep.
Anyway, she knows how to kill plots. I listened to that on the podcast, by the way, this week. And when I said that, it made me laugh. She's like, wow, ha, Brian. You don't have to accept it, Kyle. See me with Morgan. Also, I agree the friendship they try to push with her and Alicia, it never feels honest to me because she murdered her brother. And while viewers can get it because the Clarks have done bad things too, Alicia wouldn't see it that way. Charlie is only there out of forced casting moves because realistically, they would have left her or killed her back in season 4. Alicia certainly wouldn't be her mentor, that's for sure. If she did find a way to stay with them or even just be around them. I don't know if I agree with some of those assertions because I think Madison would have went out of her way to try to give Charlie, you know, show Charlie a better way of living. And I don't think that she would have stood for Alicia killing her, right? I know that she definitely had reason to do it, but, you know, the question is, you know, do you try a minor for an adult crime, I guess is what you have to ask.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what we saw in beginning of season 4. It was like Charlie was with the Vultures. And,
right.
You know, but she's, you know, snuck in and like Madison was like, hey, no, like we're protecting you and like we're like going to like take care of you and like blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, it came out. It's like, okay, well, she did go back to the Vultures and then ended up killing Nick. And, you know, it was like, yeah, she did something bad, but I think Madison was also that type of person, character, whatever, that like she was not probably happy with that and angry. But then, as long as we are at this point, And obviously, I'm one that's just like, I don't like Charlie. I wanted her dead to begin with. It's like, what? She's the one that killed, you know, Nick. But I mean, I do have to come around that it's like, after all this time, it's like, you're surviving and like, you need the people that you can trust. And it's like, everybody's done something bad. I kind of have to agree with that. It's like, Alicia kind of forgave her. Her mom's not here anymore. And like, you know, Charlie seems to have ninja skills. So it's like, you want to keep your best chess pieces with you so that you can like survive this world. And like, you know, if you're going to be fighting Jenny, then so be it. So I'm like, yes, I am making kind of a concession for the realm of the whole that we're doing, that I think Madison would have been the same way. She would have been like, yes, you killed my son. After some time, be like, you know what? I'm like, I still want to protect you, because you're like, Madison always wanted to save everyone. She wanted to make the world better. She wanted to bring those that like had wronged the world and bring them in. And I think that was the overall reaching goal that Madison had. Now that she's out of the picture, it's like, well, that's where Alicia can come in. And I think that's kind of the thing that we have to kind of get through if we're going to like move forward. And I like Charlie. I like Charlie in only the sense of the fact that it's like, you know, like she is kind of like the new member of like a group like that we do like The Walking Dead, where it was Carl and Rick and, you know, like any of them. They would run across some buddy and they would want to like help them and save them and like help bring them in. They wrong them, yeah, there would be an issue because Carl would shoot you in the face. But like in the end, this is I think this is why Charlie's still around. It was like Madison tried to save her, and in the end that's why she's part of the group.
Yeah.
The long-winded version of that.
I had to laugh at how the Rangers seemingly turned one by one so that they could just easily shoot them to stop them. It was really nice of them to do. Ha! Mary Sue Jones.
Gotta get that in there.
Yeah. I think Marty Sue or something like that. Oh, Brian, I have to nitpick you on the Arizona comment. I love you referenced Grey's Anatomy and Arizona Robbins, but she's actually named after the ship, which is named for the state, yes, the USS Arizona, which her grandfather served on, rather than the actual state itself. Okay, that is really nitpicky. And the point that I would state there is that the ship is named after the state, so I rest my case. So maybe it's, you know, she's named after the state once removed. But, you know, you could probably go in and there'd be a USS Virginia and a USS Dakota, you know. And for that matter, you know, for all we know, maybe her real name is North.
Oh, gosh. Hold on. Where's the... There you go.
And her middle name is Dakota. You know, it's not what's his name's. Yeah, because they had the child North, and his last name's West, so the kid's name is Northwest. Oh my God, it's so stupid. Not a big fan of those people.
Nope.
Stop trying to kill the Madison return vibes, guys. She could come back. Kim would do it for the fans, I think, but yeah, sadly, Gimple's ego isn't going to let it happen yet. She would blow Morgan out of the water in terms of getting things done and being interesting, so their golden child would seem even more out of place, and they don't like that. I disagree that she wouldn't fit into this season because Madison can work anywhere, but yeah, she would become a focus because she's that magnetic. So it would probably be better to save her until Ginny is done and have her appear with the helicopter people, as it would up their story danger level, because Madison is not afraid to mess people up. Ask Troy.
Oh my gosh. Hold on.
I'm thinking of, like, you know, spooning
Yes, the eyeball.
Spooning a melon. So if they wanted to increase the drama organically, Madison could appear next season, but they won't because it would invalidate their golden child, Mary Sue. And again, Gimple's ego won't allow that. You could have a Madison-like character with Alicia, which would be a bridge between the desires of each group, fans and Gimple. If they would just embrace that writing. One Morgan is too many Morgans on this show. Ha. Well, we know where you stand, but yes. but I must indicate yet again that not everyone was a Madison fan that watched the show. And I'm talking about fans of the show, not just, you know, not just people that are new to the show. There were a lot of people that didn't like Madison. She rubbed some people the wrong way. And it's, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But I think a lot of people turned around on her.
Yeah.
But I think that I don't know if that's the reason why they did it, but they did it. And I think a lot of the reason why they couldn't do it is as much like, okay, Aaron, you don't watch The Walking Dead. Okay. But Maggie left the show in the middle of season 9 to Lauren Cohan actually left the show to go do Whiskey Cavalier. And it's taken them like almost 2 seasons to get her back. So that is part of the logistical, you know, even if they wanted to bring her back, it's difficult to just reinsert a character back, not just for the writing, but also just for contracts and, you know, making sure they're available and all that stuff. Like there's a lot of things that go into doing a TV show, and it's just, you know, and even the availability of Alicia Denham Carey, like the contract may only have her coming in for certain episodes this season, you know, even though she's given full time, maybe she only has like in her contract that she'd only be in 6 episodes or something. Like this kind of thing happens. So, you know, maybe she's was planning to do another movie, or maybe she was actually doing a movie. Who knows? Or had a recurring on another show. Yeah, again, there are reasons for it, is what I'm trying to say. It's not just like, you know, oh, these producers are mean.
Right.
Or no, they don't know what they're doing. It's just a business issue a lot of times.
Right. And then, and like, that's the thing. And so if you look, it's like, okay, like when like season 3 rolled around, yes, there was already kind of a blowback. You could even listen to our old podcasts.
Yeah.
And I was like, just being a commenter and not actually on the podcast, you know, basically bashing Madison because I'm like, yeah, like I said a lot of funny things as you guys like would read.
That was season two,
but it's like, but then it's like I came on season 3, and it's like, but that season was like literally like
transformed her.
Yeah. And it made her character even better. But then we have to like remember that it's like, okay, at the end of season 3 when the dam blew up. Then we got new showrunners. It's like everything changed. And then we had to wait for like, I don't know how long it was until it finally came on. And then we got season 4. And so it's like, she like, you know, like contracts, all that, all the business part of it gets involved and this and that. And then Gimple became kind of got his fingers in there. But it's like, it's just, I would love for Madison to show up. But I think now that it's been this long, that unless there was actually something that would make sense, we have to be realistic that it's like, they could do it just for fan service, and then that would still not even play off good. It would just basically like, oh yeah, we're just ruining this just to throw Madison out there and blah, blah, blah. If she actually had a role and like there was a reason why she was gone and like why the whole stadium and all this other stuff, you know, like to me, it just seems like it's like they would really be having to like stretch everything more than they do with the walkie-talkies and the gas to be able to like make Madison show up and not be dead because
right.
Yeah, so I mean I want it, but it's just not gonna happen.
Yeah, and for the record, we would like this to happen.
Yep.
So we're on your side, but we just logistically wonder if it's possible. So
all right. Well, thank you, Aaron, for your feedback.
Yeah. And so we've got some feedback for last week from Renee from Atlanta. LT, why don't you read that?
Okay. Renee says, for this episode of Fear the Walking Dead, she gives it a 7 out of 10. She goes on to say, seriously, Alicia, the house looks haunted. Don't you dare go in. You went in there anyway. And she has facepalm emojis. She gives awesome sauce for the tree walkers looked awesome in a weird way. Her sad sauce was Grace has been locked up all this time. Jenny, you're a real psycho. She has several angry emojis. For what sauce, she says Strand, you're a real douchebag. I knew it all along. You are not to be trusted. She goes on to say, the episode was not what I expected out of a finale, but at least we know it's about to go down in 2021. I still don't trust Dakota. Something about her is off. At least the gang is somewhat back together, and Jenny's about to get her butt kicked. Virginia is the least threatening character ever. See you guys in 2021 if the Lord's willing and the creek don't rise. And I would agree with that pretty much. Get us to New Year's.
Yeah. So now we talk about The Walking Dead World Beyond, Season 1, Episode 9, titled The Deepest Cut, and Season 1, Episode 10, titled In This Life. But for all intents and purposes, we are covering this as a single episode. So this is going to be the last time that you hear us talking about an individual episode here and not about the two episodes as a whole. So episode 9 was written by Maya Goldsmith and Ben Sokolowski and directed by Sydney Freeland. Episode 10 was written by the co-showrunner, I shouldn't say co-showrunner, he's the showrunner. Showrunner Matthew Negrete, Maya Goldsmith, and Ben Sokolowski. And it was directed by Magnus Martens. The description for episode 9 is, a series of setbacks causes a member of the group to evaluate their role in the mission. Someone makes a surprising discovery. A startling revelation casts everything in a new light. And then episode 10, a divided group struggles to reunite. Others set their sign on the greater good. So, LT, what did you think of these two episodes?
Well, I'm giving them a collective 6 out of 10 bad lentils.
Bad lentils. And then, Kyle, what'd you think?
I give it a 5 M's because it seems like everyone on the show decided to drop it and call it the CR. M's.
Of course, Kyle is giving us this from the other recording. And I'm stating this a second time. I'm giving this 6. Are these people dumb? And the reason why I say that is I'll get into it when it gets time for we're not going to do things this week and awesome and all that, because we haven't been doing that for World Beyond anyway.
And just to throw this out here before we get too far away from it.
Yeah.
It's going to be weird because I didn't hear him say it, but it's really funny how up until this point we have referred to the Civic Republic military more as the Civic Republic. So everybody said CRM because that's what right. everybody said. And in the show, they refer to the Civic Republic as a whole. So that's why you get the CR.
Yeah.
But yeah, kind of inconsistent, but that's kind of the way I took it.
Yeah. So again, since we're doing this kind of weird, what I'm going to do, we got Renee's feedback in between Kyle and I's recording, and that's not even a way to say that, but when Kyle and I recorded and when LT and I are recording. So we're going to, since we're not doing sauces and all that stuff, we're going to do her feedback first. And then LT and I are going to dump on this program. And then I'm sure Kyle will have more to say at the end. So, okay. So Renee's feedback is as follows. I'm happy to know that stylus. Leave that in, Kyle. I'm happy to know that Silas didn't kill Tony, nor did he shoot Percy, and his vibe isn't a serial killer. It's abused, neglected, treated horribly by both of his parents' vibes. I did get one thing correct. Huck is definitely not on Felix and the kids' side. She also seems to have neglected parents' vibe as well, because I didn't see her and her mother greet each other with a hug, not one time when they met up, and they met several times. And that's shrug, shrug, shrug. And I will stop right there, and I will say, I agree with you, Renee. It is a very cold relationship those two have. And
well, maybe they're just not huggers.
I think it's a little more than that, don't you think?
Yeah, but still.
Felix finally woke up and realized Huck was definitely not right. Did anyone else besides me think that maybe Felix was bit? Right here, I did.
Yep.
For a minute or two.
Because they shot it just like every other time they had the big chompy reveal.
Yeah. Yeah. But then I started thinking, it's like, well, why would he do that? Why would he not, do what he needed to do to like treat it, you know? Cause I'm sure they know to amputate, but
we don't know. Maybe, yeah. maybe he's just pulling the tough guy.
Yeah. Anyway, what is up with the CRM and where is my boo? Indeed, where is your boo? That we will discuss more. I waited all this time and I didn't get a clue pertaining to his whereabouts. Yes. And that is mad face, mad face, mad face, and mad face. Yes. And that to me is the big disappointment of this show. It was a lot of talk and not much of deliverance. It was, all talk and no show. You know, it's one of those things, you know, you can say what you want, but you got to deliver the goods, and they don't. To me, they didn't deliver in this show. It's not all horrible, but it's boring.
Yeah.
For the most part. Although the last couple episodes have been better, but still, I wasn't too happy. Silas has grown on me now that I know he suffered so much. I'm praying he's going to be okay now that the CRM has him, and what's up with Felix's boyfriend and his crew. Yeah, what is up with, what's his name, Will?
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get that whole thing.
Well,
how did he get away? Who are those people?
I was going to riff on that a little later, but.
Okay.
To pull it to the other thing we've podcasted about, they kind of pulled the Arium drill on him.
Yeah.
You know, that all of a sudden here's this dude and we're finding out stuff about him. And then it's like, oh crap, we've got to introduce this character because he's got to show up in the last episode.
Yeah, exactly.
It sort of segues into the one gripe I've had about this entire run of how they handle their flashbacks.
You know,
doggone it, if they'd have just had him in an earlier episode, because they pretty much set the stage for that when we saw Felix as a kid getting kicked out of the house. But there was really no payoff. You know, there was really no indication that he had a boyfriend. And,
That was mentioned very early on that he did.
It was mentioned, but there was no actual sighting.
No actual sighting. You're right.
And that's what I'm getting at, is that, you know, they can hint at it, but doggone, I mean, like I said, they did not show us anything that I think that they could have stuck this, you know, this flashback back a little bit. So at least we'd have some idea that, oh, that's Felix's boyfriend. And, you know, just springing it on us in the last episode, again, it's the same kind of thing of, you know, the Walking Dead trope that we've talked about before. You only get any substantive character development before they bump somebody.
Yeah.
It just seems
T-dogged.
Yeah. They T-dogged him, except at least they didn't kill him, but it's still.
Right.
This was like, you know, they Penn and Tellered him. It was like, oh, we need a boyfriend. Voila. Flashbacks, have a problem with it. They should have rolled him out a little earlier.
Yeah, I think you're right. Especially they could have done that in the previous Felix flashbacks, or even in the Professor flashback. You know,
because if you got him to us a little earlier, then we could start having the notion of, okay, this is a motivation for Felix. You know, this is a reason that he's upset and wants to go. That up until now, it's just been his loyalty to Dad and trying to protect the girls. And so now we have a secondary driver that, oh, well, Will was at the research station, so he's trying to get back with Will.
See, I didn't have the problem that you had with it, because I kind of knew that he was there, but it wasn't very well handled. It wasn't very well telegraphed either. Like,
right. And that's,
it was downplayed. Like, his motivation for going there was not just to make sure that, the doctor was okay, but also that Will was okay. And that part of it, they didn't really play much.
Well, maybe so. I'm just, you know, maybe I require a larger nuance stick to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just saying it was subtle enough that I didn't pick up on it.
Yeah. Okay. So Renee continues. She says, I think they're from the campus colony, but how the heck did Felix's boyfriend get back there from New York? Well, I don't think that they were, because it's clear that that Will was being chased by them, I think, at the end, in that post-credit scene. So if you didn't see the post-credit scene, you would have missed that. But the soldiers from the CRM were chasing Will. But how he ended up with all those people, I still don't understand that at all.
Nope.
I'm happy that, you know, they've got something, but I don't understand where they all came from. So,
and I'm still trying to figure out where they're at. So I have nebulously decreed that it is in Ohio.
I think they're in New York, but it's a question of where. And how far away are they from the CRM?
Yeah. Well, I was giving them a little bit of credit of not having gotten so far yet, but
I will not give them any credit at all. She continues. She says, I have so many questions, which are good. And that means the show has become intriguing. I'm looking forward to the second season, and I'm praying I get a glimpse of my boo when it comes back in 2021. Overall, I really enjoyed the show, especially the last three episodes. Oh, I forgot to mention Elton. Please, please get rid of that damn corduroy suit. Facepalm hand, I guess. Okay, so let's get into this, LT. We both have some strong feelings about these episodes. Why don't you start it off?
Well,
and we'll just do it. Even though we're not doing sauces, let's just do it in order of sauce. Since that's pretty much how we have them listed.
That's kind of what I was going to do.
Okay.
So, good things about World Beyond. Obviously, they spent some money on the practical effects budget.
Yeah.
You know, just from the walkers, from the makeup, from the fact they had as many props and as much set dressing as they had, and the propane bill from the fire at the last fight scene, they spent some money this series.
Yeah.
You know, they obviously dropped some ducats on practical effects. We might argue that maybe they should have allocated that to another column, but I can't.
Writing.
I'll get into that, my other peeve about things later.
Yeah.
But the fact is, it looks good. I mean, other than the argument that I had earlier when, you know, you could tell that they're on the same lake on different banks for the lake pretending to be a river. Their set dressing, their set location crew did a good job. They did a good job for PE. I mean, I can't fault them for that. Other than a couple of glaring things about lightning storms, their cinematography was really good this
run. Yeah.
I like this episode, the fact that finally, we get more than just the mute serial killer stare from Silas, that the actor that plays Silas got to show a few of his chops and actually delivered some lines and showed some depth.
Yeah.
You know, before he disappeared into CRM Gitmo at the end there.
Yeah, at least he did get to finally show some depth.
Yeah, I mean, actually showed that, you know, he pulled off some emotion. He pulled off a little depth there. Yep. And honestly, that to me, that redeemed his performance in the series for me.
Yeah.
Because really all he did was, you know, look dopey, look sad, look ashamed, look awkward. And he didn't deliver that many lines, but, I'm glad that he got what he got at the end. I wish the story would have ramped up to where he could have done that two or three episodes ago.
Yeah.
What I wrote was, dang it, Hope. You know, she showed some really good depth, and she showed that, you know, she showed lots more facets of her character, but then it's just that hard left turn off into teen angst land again.
Yeah.
And I'm going to complain about her a little bit later when we get into the other parts of it. But of the sisters, I really like Hope much better than I like Iris.
Yes, I agree.
That young actor showed that she's got some chops, even with the spotty writing and the things that she was given.
Yeah.
But doggone it, we had to go back off into the greater good.
And, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
And her wandering off with Huck. I was going to have to talk about Elton, that there's a lot of stuff that I'm going to be bagging on the way they wrote him, but he actually proved to be, and he was definitely the Samwise of this journey.
Yeah, I agree with that.
He was the good friend. He did stuff in spite of his own best interest because he's a good friend. And, you know, that last scene with him and Silas before Silas wandered off to get captured.
You are my best friend.
Yeah. That, you know, Elton has done a lot of the hopefulness. If anybody has actually brought a degree of hopefulness to the show, at the last few bits there. I mean, come on, he saved Percy. He did lots of good things in spite of all the stuff that I'm going to again bag on him later when we get to it. And I'm really on the fence with Hook. I like her character. I like the actor. I like the way she played the part. But, oh, Hook. You know, the fact that I like what they did with her character, but just the shady, backhanded, nasty stuff that she did to the rest of the crew. It definitely changed my mind on her a little bit. And if there's any credits to be done besides the blunt force and lumberyard quality woodenness that we've gotten out of some of the stuff that was written, I still like Huck's character.
Yeah. I think some of how she portrayed Huck, I liked, and some of it I didn't like.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like two thirds, one third on her. And the stuff that I really like, I really like. And the stuff that I don't like, I don't like at all. So.
Oh yeah, and I'm right there with you. I am absolutely right there with you.
Yeah. Well, my positives, I guess, would be I really did enjoy the fight scene. I thought that was a good fight scene. Finally, we...
The one in the house?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Finally, you know, we had some action in this show. It's been sorely lacking. So to get that action scene, you know, in the last episode, I thought was really good. And it felt like it was earned. And, you know... But I have something to say at the end that I still don't understand. So,
okay.
They also, I would say some of the acting in these two episodes were really good. One of the things I'll mention that I thought was really good, the Elton and Percy hallucinating scenes, all that interaction with Elton and Percy, I thought was really good. I thought the guy that plays Percy was really good in those.
Yeah.
You know, as well as Nicholas Cantu, I think. I think overall he was a surprise in this show. I thought he did really well, and I don't think he's done a lot of acting before this show, so. And I think he was like the youngest cast member of the four of them.
Yeah. I don't think he has either, but I will agree with you there.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the reveal that it was Hope that was the asset. I thought that it was somewhat unexpected, although I kind of expected it based on like, once you kind of realize that, that Huck was the mole,
right,
that it had to be Hope, especially the way that she, you know, started talking to Iris, like being so obvious that, you know, she was trying to like separate them and all that stuff. It didn't ring true to me.
Once you suspected that Huck was the mole, it kind of telegraphed the fact that she was hanging with Hope so much.
Right. So anyway, I like that. I think it was somewhat unexpected, but also somewhat earned. And I like it being Hope as the asset, but I have a lot of problems about her being the asset.
Yeah.
I'll get to in a minute. But so the other thing that I liked about this was the sister muses. This kind of idea that two people end up being smarter together than they are separately. It's a thing that I have seen before, but I've never actually had it happen to me. But when I heard this story, recently. It was kind of it opened my eyes up a lot. So, but you know, it's believable to me that if you're on the same wavelength with someone, you can make each other smarter than you are individually. So in other words, like if you didn't pick up on what I'm saying, yes, Hope built this or rebuilt this computer, but it was Iris that kind of helped her figure out some things that weren't gelling, you know, so she needed Iris to like finish the work. And if Iris hadn't been there, Hope wouldn't have finished, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So it's the idea that you have two people who have such a good synergy together that they think with one mind, and because of their different skill sets, different personalities, they can piece together more than just one of them could.
Yeah. And, yeah. So anyway, it was very cool to hear that. Okay. So these are the positives. Kyle, we know you have some positives, so I guess you can stick them in right here now.
All right. As you know, I'm recording this separately because of was not able to make it. And actually, the audio from me and Brian on Tuesday, we didn't quite go through our sauces like I thought we did. But I'm going to add some of that, our riffs, later in the show. So for now, my awesome sauce, I'm going to have to say, is the walkers again. It's nice seeing different kinds and how they can be a little more interesting. That's kind of been fun on the show. It's like seeing the walkers, you know, dragging the barbed wire, because that's, you know, because it's something more than you have to deal with when you're killing them. So it's kind of cool to see, like, oh yeah, it's not just your standard walker. It's just, you know, like walkers of barbed wire. We saw that on Fear. It's like the walker that had the like fingertip nails like strapped on. So I mean, it seems like they are definitely having more fun with walkers and, you know, just doing something different. And that's, I don't know, the whole season of Fear. And you know, there were some really cool ones in World Beyond. So they're having fun with it, and I'm enjoying that part. So I had to give it, you know, an awesome sauce for the walkers for the whole. And also, I guess, Felix and Will's relationship. You know, it's good to see the LGBTQ plus community represent. So that was definitely an awesome sauce. And I have to agree with what I've heard from what Brian and LT will say. It's just, you know, it's like they should have had Will so much sooner than they did. So I'll leave it at that.
There is one more good thing that I wanted to bring up that I forgot about. Almost forgot about, and that is the flashlight walker. So I thought that was a cool effect. So
it was.
Yeah. Yeah. So it just wanted to mention that. So, all right. So now we've got some weak stuff, some not so good stuff. So LT, again, I'll give you the honors. You start.
Thank you, sir. There's no way you could convince me that anybody in this crew could survive a herd like we've seen in the Prime show, when one or two walkers sends them into spasmodic fits.
Yeah.
It's
ridiculous. Like, you know, four walkers would have, or as they call them, empties, four empties would have killed, what's his name? Elton and Percy. Now Percy, we understand he was shot, you know, he's not going to really be able to defend himself, but Elton, come on. It's like after 10 years, you don't know how to defend yourself enough. And what's with the whole stupid Ronco Pocket Fisherman?
I'm going to have to complain about that myself, but yeah, is that, and on top of that, he's uphill.
Yeah.
He's got the uphill advantage. And, but all the scenes they've had, the closest they've come to a decent sized herd was in the barbed wire field.
Yeah.
Cause I think there was maybe 10 or 12.
Yeah.
And I'm not really sure how well they handled that, but it's been this thing of they have not encountered any large numbers of walkers, which, okay, Huck and Hope on the road maybe had about 10 or 12, but they run into ones and twos and they just, I guess we've gotten kind of complacent, maybe lucky, the fact that all the people we've dealt with, even in the first parts of Fear, when they started dealing with multiple walkers, after they figured out what the deal was, it was more of, let's just TCB. You know, this has been, these kids have still just been, you know, oh my God, there's walkers. And they just have not been able to figure it out. And I think they should have by now. Percy and the gunshot. I have some issues with Percy and the gunshot.
Okay.
For starters. So he's been shot and he's been losing blood all this time. So luckily, Elton puts on the magic miracle poultice, and the recuperative ability of this magic miracle poultice must have been pretty good, because he also got, and I called it in my notes, a Call of Duty quality bandage. But it was basically, he just bandaged him up like you would see in most first-person shooters, somebody getting bandaged animation. Because after that, once he got him out of the wheelbarrow when they met up with Silas, he seemed pretty spry, that he stopped being so pale and he could talk, and he seemed to be fine. And it's really funny how, he recovered from this gunshot wound. And just, yeah, I've heard this a couple other places and just know from personal experience. You know, in the movies, they always love shooting you in the shoulder because they go, oh, well, that's a non-debilitating wound.
Right.
And I beg to differ, kids, because if you look at how that part of your body works, there's lots of moving pieces and lots of multiply attached cartilaginous bones and joints and sockets and things. And actually, from a biomechanical standpoint, one of the worst places you can get shot is in the shoulder. And I kind of noticed that, you know, Percy didn't seem to be, you know, he still seemed to be a climby and carry and ducky and dodgy. And let's also be honest, there's no exit wound. If she shot him in the shoulder, there's probably still a bullet in there. So unless Elton pulled out his Swiss Army knife and did a MacGyver surgery after he put the poultice on during the commercial, I just had thought he had too much of a miracle recovery there.
Yeah, definitely.
And I know we talked about the fight in the field, but I had an issue with Felix and I got cut by barbed wire. No, I really got shanked in the back.
Yeah.
And, you know, I may not know much, but I know the difference between getting my foot caught in wire and going draggy-draggy and somebody, you know, whacking me on the back of the calf with something sharp and cutty.
Yeah.
I didn't buy it. And that's, again, coming from a fairly rural, semi-agrarian background, I've had the opportunity to stick my leg in old barbed wire and get cut, and, you know, trip over things that were in the vines. And it's a different sensation. So that was, I mean, we weren't quite to the jumping the Snake River Canyon of disbelief again, but it was kind of, I didn't really buy it.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you.
Just to segue onto your flashlight riff, I do agree that it was a cool practical effect, but a flashlight is swung like a baton or a club. It is not used as a thrusting instrument.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was like stuck in his head like a golf tee.
Well, actually she stuck it. It was stuck in his throat.
Yeah.
And, you know, Again, not that I know anything about it, but if you're going to hit somebody with a flashlight, you swing it like it's a baton or swing it like a stick.
Yeah.
You know, side to side, up and down, whack, whack, whack. Okay. Back to Elton Percy on the Hill. And when you were talking about our fabulous Pope Hill pocket fisherman, I kind of had a problem with the walkers going all turtle once he wrapped them up in fishing line.
Yeah.
And I kept imagining hearing the cartoon, you know, the Scooby-Doo running noise when he was running around them. It just seemed like a cartoon thing that he goes, whip, 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 runs around them with the string, and then they fall over and laid there like you had hogtied them. And I'm going, it's only 15-pound monofilament fishing line, for God's sake. You know, I just, he wrapped them up and they fell over and they just laid there going, so, yeah. And then, so, back at the research facility. So, Dad and Dr. Sandwich Lady have been hanging out.
Sandwich Lady.
You know, from that scene where we saw poor Dr. Schmutnik from Portland.
Oh,
when
yeah.
He was on the cart with the thing in his mouth and she was doing the how long he's been turned thing.
Yeah.
And she was eating that big freaking, you know, basketball loaf sized sandwich. That's how she ended up. You know, consider I couldn't remember Elton's name for a while, and he was Corduroy Suit Boy. And she's Dr. Sandwich. So Dad and Dr. Sandwich apparently have been keeping each other company while he's been off on his research junket. And it just makes me think that maybe she's another mole.
She's definitely in mole. That's
everybody in the CR. It's almost like when they talked about, oh God, like the old Soviet Union, that you had the political commissar or somebody who was into the party that was like keeping tabs on everybody.
Yeah.
You know, she's basically playing the mole with Dad. And it just made me wonder if she had previously been hanging out with the former doctor from Portland.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
And I had put it down that I think my new euphemism for being dead on the show is he's going home to visit his sister in Portland.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like definitely she is a mole, just like Huck's a mole. And I don't know when he says, you know, you could help me, you know, prove it or whatever, like, does he know that she's a mole, or does he not know that she's a mole?
No, he doesn't know she's a mole.
I don't think so either.
Because I think that they must, you know, they must breed naivete along with the corn in Omaha. Because I think he is honestly thinking that she's in the same kind of place that he is.
Yeah,
and you know, like you said, knowing what we know, she's got freaking plant written all over her.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, if I'm wrong, hey, I'll own it. But
you are not wrong.
But, you know, I have a great deal of suspicion about the motives of Dr. Sandwich there. Especially when they had that scene where she was on the phone and she's at the desk by herself and she's looking at his research notes.
Yeah. I have no question that she is I won't even consider the idea that she is not a mole. What I'm seeing is she's mole, 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 mole,
mole, mole, mole, mole, mole. Oh yeah.
No way she's not a mole.
Yeah. But like I said, it just makes me think of, well, did she do that? Did she do that to Dr. Portland before she decided to hang out with Dad? Or
maybe.
Then again, did they put her with Dad from the beginning because of all their suspicions about Campus Colony? We don't know.
And why did they have suspicions? That's what I don't understand either. You know,
I think, if you look at it from the standpoint of any, and I don't want to say totalitarian, but any strictly controlled society like that.
Yeah.
I think that they see suspicion at all corners of anybody that's not in house.
Sure.
So, to kind of go along with what you're saying, if you have somebody from outside that's one of your research people, of course you're going to try to find somebody that's your guy or your gal to insert right. them into the group to kind of keep eyes on them to see, you know, make sure they ain't fomenting insurrection or anything. So, yeah,
right.
that was kind of my deal with, you know, Dad and her. And especially the fact that, I mean, come on, Dad's not that old. You know, he's recently lost his wife, or his wife is, well, I won't say recent.
10 years ago.
yeah, 10, 12 years ago. She's fairly, you know, old Doc Sandwich is fairly attractive. So, you know, why wouldn't he sort of be interested? He's working those long hours in the lab at night with her.
Sure.
So, yeah, it just kind of fits. And again, I'm just wondering this is the thing. If he's still doing research, if he's still down in the lab, isn't Dr. Portland going to show up on the zombie caddy at some point? And he goes, hey.
Well, unless he is, not that kind of doctor, like if he is, you know, like a science professor or a biologist or
yeah,
something like that.
But if they're working like that in the lab, not to go on to one of my later points, but you kind of get into the, no, you don't want to go in that room. There's something bad in that room. Don't go in that room.
Well, just like Huck did.
yeah. And yeah. I'm just saying, I wonder about the timing since they don't like putting their flashbacks in any kind of sequential type order.
Yeah.
Cause I think given what we know about Will on the security detail, it just seems to me that the doc would have been a little bit edgier if his bodyguard would have gone vamoose.
Yeah.
At the point of the conversation there. So,
well, I guess it's my turn.
It is.
And I don't have that much to say about the episode that, you know, you haven't already said. My issues are more to do, well, I guess some of them are episode related, but they have more to do with the show itself at this point, because we finally get some reveals about, you know, what's going on. And, I just don't get it. I don't like, and when I say I don't get it, I mean, I don't buy it. So it's both. I don't get these characters and these people, but I also don't get what they were trying to accomplish as a show, like, or what they were trying to portray as a show, as what, you know, this civilization, the whole show, the whole universe now has this CRM that is touching all three shows.
Right.
And to me, the CRM is a bunch of horse shit. It's horse shit. It's based on horse shit. It makes no fucking sense at all. Sorry, Kyle. It makes no fucking sense. Okay. Okay. First of all, they exterminate an entire community of people for one person, one single person, a person that has not been trained. Okay. If she is such a freaking brilliant person, it's going to take her years to become the person that they think that she is. And yet they kill off an entire community of what was there, close to 10,000 people there or something like that? Like a lot.
Yeah.
Right? Regardless of the amount, a lot. And I'm sorry, but you can't save a civilization with one person. It's it takes people, a lot of people. And if maybe this is like insight that comes out of the out of COVID, but you need more than just geniuses to rebuild a civilization. We now know how important it is for people that just, you know, drive trucks and do processing in the plants and, you know, get us our goods. And you know, like if they weren't around over these last 9 months or so, the whole worldwide economy would have collapsed, right? You need leaders, you need workers, you do need smart people, but you don't need only smart people. And that's what drives me freaking nuts about this whole thing. It makes no sense at all what they have told in this show. It makes no sense. Like you can't.
You need janitors as well as scientists.
Exactly.
You need farmers. You need machinists. Farmers.
You need police. You need warriors. You need teachers. You need all sorts of. And you need people. Like that's what kills me. That the whole thing they killed. Whether or not it was Kublai that acted alone to kill off the colony to save, you know, to save the ass of her daughter, if that's what the motivation was, and she was acting alone, or she was under orders to kill off the colony, it still makes no sense. The CRM would need those people to make stuff. It again makes no sense at all. None. Zero. So the whole universe is based on a flawed concept, right? This concept is flawed of CRM, which means the show is flawed. And if the whole thing has inner workings on the whole universe, the entire universe is flawed.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you. And okay, so Hope, she's this wunderkind based on like the stories of a proud parent. That's all it is. No IQ test, nothing.
And I mean, come on. Every parent thinks their kids are geniuses. Even, yes. You know, even if they spent the majority of their first grade year eating paste. I mean, every parent thinks their kids are geniuses.
Yes. So, you know, this is more of a macro. This was what I just gave you, listeners, is I think there's like 12 points.
Yeah.
And I basically touched all of them in there.
And I'm going to go back into this in a little bit myself.
Oh, you've got even more?
I have
okay,
more.
Okay, good.
I have more. If you want me to start in now.
Go ahead. But I will just, go ahead and do it now because okay. I'll just leave off my last point.
Well, while you were later. Talking about that, I kind of went more micro to your macro. But for my bit. So Kublai said that they had to destroy the campus colony to maintain operational security and to give them motivation to go. I mean, isn't this kind of like the old, I mean, again, I realize how old I am and how old you are and you'll get it. But there was a thing that came out of Vietnam called the Pentagon Papers. And at one point there was a thing that said in order to save the village, it was necessary to destroy it. And I'm just kind of going, okay, so if she's acting alone, if she's just using the power of her rank, doesn't that mean that somebody up the chain is going to go, wait a minute?
You think so?
Well, like you said, if it was a black op, I mean, if it was something where they did it stealthily and sneakily, they wouldn't have kind of been as much as out in the open with it as they did.
I agree with that.
If the asset is that valuable and if Huck is that valuable as an operator, does it not occur to anybody else that in the real world, in the world that I live in, if you find out that the people that you're supposed to be going to help killed everybody you knew and destroyed the home that you had grown up in, wouldn't that perhaps be a bit of a demotivator for her to come over and do what you want her to do?
It kind of would. Yeah.
And
it kind of would.
Just like you said, if you're talking about people are a resource and people are a finite resource.
And even Negan thinks this.
Yeah. And adults are especially a finite resource, and skilled adults who actually have a means, a place, and a mechanism to produce goods are a finite resource. Why would you wipe out a whole productive colony for a teenager?
It makes no sense.
Yeah. It's like you said, it just sort of beggars logic to me I keep saying there's just got to be more to it. In order for me to buy it, there has to be something else. There had to be another reason. If it was just, we're going to destroy home base so you can't go back, and we're going to use that to be a motivator in case you decide to go back home, that, oh God, there's nothing here, so I've got to go on. I just think that the fly in the ointment is going to be, Hope doesn't know, but Iris and Felix know. We will assume they know now, because we'll assume that Will knows. So Well, I mean, he did leave it with, like, we've got a lot to talk about.
Oh, that's true.
So if Iris and Hope hook back up, do you not think that the first thing that's going to come out of Iris's mouth is, you know, the people you're working for, you know, killed everybody we knew and burned our house down?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I took it to more of a micro level than you did, but yeah, I'm just having a problem. If this is the group that is trying to rebuild society, it just seems to me that they are driving finishing nails with a sledgehammer. It just seems like it's way more, you know, it's way more force and way more wanton destruction.
Yeah.
Because if you want to go back to the Negan model, if you are having a problem with, you know, well, Omaha Campus Colony is a hotbed of insurrection, you send in the troopies. You do an old school Roman decimation. You know, you make some examples. You crack down on them. You do whatever. But you don't just kill everybody. I mean, that's what we saw with the Whisperers, you know. And their whole thing was, there's no more society. This is it. It's, you know, the end of things that were. And all there is us living, you know, living in the woods, walking with walkers. And I like you said, it just makes my head hurt thinking that, you know, the Civic Republic is supposed to be, you know, our last best hope for society and civilization. And yet they basically are the antithesis of that with what they did at the Campus Colony.
Yeah. 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 And, you know, the thing that the doctor said about how he thinks that the CR government is doing good, but the military he doesn't trust. I mean, that may end up being exactly the truth. Like, we never knew exactly, like, for example, where did Maggie end up?
Exactly.
You know, we don't know. And what was it, Georgie? Like, was Georgie from CR, you know, the Civic Republic? Or, you know, we don't know. But,
well, the thing about that I've noticed about CR is they're big about branding.
Right.
And I didn't see Georgie with any, you know, she didn't have her ring paraphernalia on. That even when Kublik was in civvies, you know, her non-black fatigue-y looking outfit, she still had her freaking three rings pin on.
Yeah.
So maybe Georgie is from some other group. You know, do we have, you know, what was it, the Commonwealth that we still haven't seen, or some other, you know, we don't know what, you know, Gimple and whoever else have in the wings for that.
Right.
So, yeah. And my only other thing, they haven't told us. We haven't gotten anything other than dribs, drabs, and nibbles. But do we, you know, would it make any sense that if they had this great, you know, democratized civil government making all these wonderful things to keep civilization intact, and yet you've got this out of control military wing that's wiping out colonies? That doesn't add up to me, because
no,
if the civil government's got any strength, they're going to control that. And if the military's running things, or if there is some sort of, you know, strict dictatory thing going on, then you'd see that. I think you would see more harshness on the civilian side. And we really didn't see that at the colony either. So,
yeah.
Okay. So down to my last bit of weakness. So back to Huck in the room not to go in. So you tell me, what kind of teenager is so not curious that they wouldn't try to sneak into the room and look if they were told, don't go in there and look? I'm sorry. I've had two teenagers, and I've worked with scouts for years, and pretty much guaranteed, if you said there's dead bodies in that room, don't go look, they would wait for you to turn around, and the first thing they would do is they would be peeking in that door.
Yeah.
So, I agree. So just Iris being so atypical that, I mean, come on, how many times has Iris done what you've told her to do anyway? Iris, don't go to New York. I'm going to New York. You know, Iris, don't go that way. I'm going that way. So now she's going to choose not to look in the room. As far as not seeing things, I'm struggling with the fact of, how did Felix not see what we saw and suspect that Huck was up to something? She disappeared for 2 days, for God's sake.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody questioned that either.
Yeah. And it's just like, oh, well, that's just Huck. No. There's just too many times where we're having the moment, and I think I mentioned it later in my notes, but, you know, we're having the moment where we're screaming at the television going, it's her, it's her. And we saw it as the viewer.
Yeah.
And he was just blithely going along, and it took him a while to put two and two together. Before I go into it, I don't want to diminish what we said about the fight scene. I like the fight scene in the burning house. I love the choreography. I thought it was one of the best fight scenes, I would say, of the series, just for duration and how it was acted. But once again, my real life hat came on, and I'm like, you know, was that house made out of asbestos? Was it made out of Nomex? Because given the age of the house, and the fact that it's a shingle house that's probably made out of pine lumber, it would have gone up like a road flare soaked in gasoline.
I thought that too, actually.
And you may ask, well, LT, why do you say that? Well, I'm glad you asked. Several times in my career, I've dealt with directing traffic at house fires of houses that are very similar in construction. And, you know, they went up like freaking rockets. They wouldn't have time to have that kind of a fight scene if it had been a real genuine fire in a shingle wooden house like that. And
it almost looked like the place was made out of concrete.
Yeah, but no, it from when they first went in, it was your typical clapboard wooden two-story farmhouse. And on the side note of that is, that was the cleanest fire inside I've ever seen. You know, where's the choking smoke?
Yeah, that's true.
So that was just me trying not to be too real about it. But okay, so back to Hope.
You were right about that, though. I had similar thoughts. Like, I really enjoyed the fight, but the fire, I didn't.
Yeah. Because I'm sorry, they would have been either collapsing from the smoke, or they would have been burnt to a crisp by the time they got to the kitchen.
Yep.
Okay. So Hope decoded this cipher page, and she, you know, did all this cipher work and figured it out. So it was just a little too convenient that the one message that she decodes was the one that pretty much said, "Hi, I'm Huck and I'm a mole."
Yep.
You know, it could have been anything in the world. It could have been any other, you know, we're en route with supplies, we're on the road, but no. This was pretty much like the biggest smoking gun that could have been laid at her feet. And yep. I'm just like, really? Really? But then again, you know, subtlety has not been one of their strong suits.
Yeah, and I guess that makes me wonder, like, is that why they want her so bad? Because she can break a cipher?
Well, it's definitely part of it that she's got, you know, that maybe she has that sort of deductive process. And the only bad thing is, just from a cryptographic standpoint, is if it was the case of using that sort of cipher, I think it's good she figured out it was the map was the reference, because if you figure out the map's a reference, then the rest of it falls into place fairly easily.
Right.
The hard part of that sort of cipher is knowing what your key is. It's kind of like the cipher they used in one of the Mission Impossible movies, where the code, the key was the Gideon Bible. It's the same kind of thing. And so, once more about Huck. And I put it in my notes. Obviously, Huck never saw Zombieland.
Yeah.
Because what's the rule of Zombieland?
Double tap.
The double tap. There's a thing that circulated around the internet about rules of gunfighting. And one of the rules is, if anything's worth shooting, it's worth shooting more than once. Bullets are cheap. Lives are expensive. So it was my thing of, okay, so she's a trained killer, and she didn't shoot him in the river. She shot him in the house. So she only shot him once. She shot him in the shoulder, and he managed to wander off. Maybe she was too busy bludgeoning Tony. But I just had a problem with, he made it all the way from the building to the river to escape, and she only shot him once. I thought that was kind of weak. When we were griping about the writing, it's the fact that the plot seems to drive their capacity to figure things out, that, you know, Huck was playing everybody. Huck was Miss Mole, but Iris didn't get it until it was time to get it. You know, Felix didn't figure it out until it was time to figure it out. And like I said, it just seems like they made these really big, obvious, glaring, oh, this should make you suspicious, but nobody goes, hey, wait a minute, until it's time for the plot and it works out.
Yeah.
I really hate to dish again. I hate to dish on Elton, but when he was sitting on top of the Connex box and he was looking at Mom's manuscript, I knew what was going to happen.
Oh yeah.
I said, I know what he's going to do. He's going to have a tantrum. He's going to tear it, and he's going to throw pages. And the next thing you're going to see is what? Him walking down the road, chasing pages.
Yeah.
Now, granted,
I agree.
Granted, it is a teenage behavior, but I wish they could have done something a little different.
Yeah, well, maybe they could have started by having the characters in their 20s.
Yeah. And about Elton. So Elton dragging Percy. This goes back to the old riff of how did the swallow carry the coconut? You know, it's not a matter of how he grips it. It's a matter of pure aerodynamics. He's a little wiry kid and he's dragging a much larger guy.
Yeah.
And apparently he drug him a fairly good piece before he got his little wagon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And on top of that, he's dragging a freaking suitcase and a duffel bag.
Yeah.
So
Elton's got superhuman strength. Who knew?
I know we had talked about it before, but I was just kind of cranky about Will and Felix. And like I said before, the fact they just sort of sprung it on us in the last episode or the last two, I really wish they would have done something with it earlier. You know, maybe thrown that dinner scene a little further towards the beginning, because it just seems like, as you and I have both said, they kind of T-dogged it it just didn't feel as natural to me, the fact they just loaded all that in there at the end.
Yeah.
And I guess my biggest gripe is just, again, normal logistics. So what are they eating? What are they drinking?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. We called Elton. Somebody called him, you know, little Doctor Who. Does he have a TARDIS suitcase? You know, is it bigger on the inside than it is on the outside? Does he still have some of those beanie weenies and canned sardines they found at the bottom of the school? It just seems like they've gone a long way. I mean, we saw Silas eat a rabbit after he set a fire. It just seems like that after they were worried about supplies, that we never really saw any sort of drinky, eaty things. And okay, so they've got big backpacks. We know that some of the big backpack is sleeping bag. I just the logistics of, if they've gone this far, what are they eating? What are they drinking?
Well, plus, you know, it seems like much like in all of the iterations of The Walking Dead, the United States is like the size of Rhode Island or something, because it seems like they have crossed from, you know, Nebraska to New York in a very short amount of time, particularly like getting from Mississippi to New York State. that's quite the drive, and not something that you could do, especially in, you know, apocalypse times. You could do very quickly, you know, and even out of apocalypse times, you couldn't do very quickly.
Well, exactly. I mean, it makes you think that, okay, so Iowa,
especially if you're going on secondary roads, you're not going on the interstate, you're going on, you know, like US 322 or whatever it would be.
Yeah. You're going back roads in your own foot.
Yeah, that's in Cleveland. Yep. but the example is true.
Yeah, so I guess that Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Delaware.
Well, I don't think he'd go through Delaware.
I misspoke, but still.
Ohio.
Yeah,
Ohio, Pennsylvania.
Are all the size of Delaware and Rhode Island.
Exactly.
The same reason that we have Rhode Island, Texas.
Yeah, exactly. They're all the size of Rhode Island, every single one of them.
So that means the U.S. is what, the size of maybe England?
Yeah, it seems that way. It does seem that way. It just seems so screwy, you know. And like, how much gas did they have in that truck? You know, because they were going to have to refill. So are you telling me that they had enough gas to refill? I don't think so.
That they drove. Well, they drove till Huck blew the tire.
Right.
And then once Iris and Felix found the can of Turbo Fix-A-Flat, that they took off again. And then after they gave the truck up to Huck and Hope, they drove however long they drove to get to the field where the dust off happened. So,
yeah,
I don't know. Do old raggedy trucks in the apocalypse obviously get better mileage?
Who knows?
Who knows? I mean, and again, if they'd have just stuck two freaking jerry cans on the back of the tailgate where we could have seen them, then my disbelief would go, well, they did have two cans of gas, but you know, they didn't throw me a bone on that one. So I'm with you that I know that credit where credit is due. I know Aim for the Head kept saying that they need the Indiana Jones map with the red line.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They did kept saying that. I heard them say that today, actually.
And I would absolutely be 100% down with that.
Yeah.
Because you and I have both ragged about the one problem this series has is scale of distance.
Yeah.
And that would have at least given me some mental pause to go, okay, well, the little red line says they're in Poughkeepsie now.
Yeah, and it seems like The Walking Dead does a much better job with this than the other two shows. I don't know why this is, but I don't recall having this many problems when, say, they went from Atlanta to DC. You know, it was portrayed in a way that, yes, they did most of it over the course of like one episode, but it was portrayed in a way that seemed reasonable.
They gave you they gave you a better scale of distance.
Right.
And how many times did they do that long down the road shot of, you know, Rick and Daryl walking down the highway when it's just a long, straight, flat road?
Right.
And even back when Abraham had the fire truck, they did the same thing. They had some pretty long shots showing roadway.
Yeah.
And, you know, Fear's been bad about it, and this show's been bad about it, that, as we've said, that one minute they're here, and the next minute, you know, hey, we're in Schenectady.
Yeah. What else you got?
You know, that's about it. I wanted to say, you know, just to wrap up things, that I think these two were probably better than the first eight.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that the last three were probably better than the first seven. I think it started getting better like episode eight, I would say. But yeah, I tend to agree with you.
But that's the thing, is that it took them, you know, if it takes you six episodes out of 10 to get any kind of forward motion, the part that bugs me is that, yay, I'm happy that things finally picked up and things finally got more interesting, but now it's over.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to get your momentum going, you want to get it earlier in the run.
Yeah.
And not just, because the problem is now, yes, I'm going to have to wait for them to do whatever they're going to do whenever the next 10 drop. And they did a better job of getting me on the hook to make me go, gosh, I'm really excited to see what happens next. But
yeah,
doggone it, I resent it a little bit because, you know, I want to say, why weren't you this good at episode 3 or episode 4?
Well, yeah. Yeah, there was definitely a pacing issue. I would agree with you 100% that the pacing of this series was not it was not good. And you know, part of it, I heard a story or read a story today or yesterday, and it was that the show, and I remember hearing this originally, they were going to have a big plane crash. Like that whole thing about the day the sky fell or whatever.
Right.
There was supposed to be a big plane crash, and perhaps there was going to be a big plane crash in those first couple of episodes. Right. So So that was going to be the big, you know, how do you do? And that would have like propelled the story, you know, going forward. And it would have given us that action, that drama that we needed. But apparently they pulled it back. And I don't know if maybe AMC got cold feet because of the declining ratings of The Walking Dead, or if they just pulled money out of it, you know, just because of the couldn't have been a COVID issue because this was shot before COVID.
Yep.
So, I really wonder if they pulled back the budget, you know, because of, like I say, the script, the ratings not being up to par, and that's why I also think that supposedly what I heard was they were planning this, and then the writers went, no, we're going to go a different direction. And what I'm guessing is that different direction was AMC saying, no, you can't do this anymore. Or maybe they wanted to do more than they could afford. You know, who knows?
Which is possible as well.
Yeah. Well, I don't have too much left to say. I would bring up the end of the fight was a head scratcher for me. Like, all it took was Hope, like, putting a gun to her head, and then it was like all hostility stopped. And it was kind of like they never resumed once she, you know, said okay or whatever, I'll go. Like, there almost seemed to be like forgiveness between Huck and Felix, which I didn't understand. Like, I didn't get the vibe there. And
yeah,
you know,
I'll go with that.
And the other thing I'll say is that some of the acting was really good on this show. Some of the acting I didn't think was very good. And it could have been just the actors not getting getting good material, or it could have been the actors themselves. And I will say, and I hate to criticize, but I will agree with what Aim for the Head had to say when I was listening to him today. Iris, she might be envisioned or, you know, portrayed as to be a strong leader or a strong future leader, not necessarily conveyed in her acting though.
Nope.
You know, I would say of the four, you know, main young adult actors, I think she was the weakest of the four. And you know, originally I thought maybe Silas was, but I think at the end of the last two episodes, I have to say that Iris, they put a lot of weight on her shoulders, and I don't think that she delivered. And I think a lot of the failure was in her hands, and to a lesser extent, Hope, because, and I said this early on, because, you know, she looked too made up. Like, she looked like she had just come out of the shower every time that she was seen. Like, you know what I mean? She just looked
too clean and too kempt.
Yes. And that's not really a criticism of her acting as much as it is a criticism of how they made her up, you know? And the other shows have had this problem. Like, they had this problem for seasons with Alicia. Like, Alicia's character looked too beautiful in several seasons, but now she's gotten down and dirty. She doesn't have that failing anymore. But Hope definitely had that issue. I didn't completely buy how weak these characters were, like, and especially them being so weak and being able to go halfway across the country. You know, I that just seems to be like a recipe for disaster to me. And I don't think that in reality they would have been able to do that.
Well, and on your point, I think that Felix looked grubbier as time went on.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, you started seeing Elton look a little grubbier, but Hope and Iris, neither one of them ever had much road grime.
Right.
And I guess I don't want to just say, oh, it was bad writing. Because I think that while the writers may be suspect, you still have to put it, you know, do you blame the person delivering the lines for not convincing you because they have weak lines to deliver, or just their delivery? And I agree with you that I think that of all the characters, I just had more trouble buying Iris. I had more problems buying her in what they wanted us to believe she was.
Yeah.
Well, and just to say it again, you know, I don't want to blame the writing. I don't want to say that the writers were weak, just out of course. I think there was some weakness there, but I don't want to blame what the actors did and just say, oh, well, it was just bad writing.
Yeah.
Because you still have to have somebody to carry it off. And I just didn't. I mean, she may be in something else and I think she's lovely, but I just didn't see Iris really bringing the goods and doing, you know, convincing me of what she was saying.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think she was quite selling me on it.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, I kind of bought Hope's performance a little better, but I do have to agree with you that both the girls are a little too pretty for having been on the road all this time. I mean, Huck looked more dirty and road worn, and we knew she's had a shower.
Yeah.
And she technically has an excuse to look a little cleaner.
Yeah.
Because at some point when she had her debrief, what did she say? Go clean up.
Yeah.
So I think there was a lot of potential here. I don't think that they necessarily carried it off as well as they had hoped. And I think the ratings kind of show that.
Yep.
We'll
go into that in a minute.
So,
I tend to think, though, that, you know, the casting on this particular show wasn't there. Like, I was saying that I liked certain aspects of, how do you say her name? Annette Mahendru?
Yeah.
I think that's how you say it. I didn't understand the accent, though. Like, was she trying to play Louisianan or something? Or was she just some other weird accent because of her mother being British? And why is her mother British?
Well, her mother's British, and she sort of waffled between her natural accent and this sort of pseudo-Southern that she was going with. And it just seemed kind of waffly from one session to the next of how she was going to sound.
Yeah, yeah. So that was, her actions and her character, like her face and her, you know, I thought those were really good. I thought that she played the spy or whatever, the agent. I thought she played that really well. I don't think she gave it away, you know, but I also think that her performance wasn't perfect.
No.
I thought, what's his name that played Felix? Nico Tortella?
Yeah.
I thought he did well. Of course, Julia Ormond was great when she was on. Didn't see enough of her. But we also didn't get enough of the CRM. We didn't get an explanation of the CRM and what they're doing. And this is why it's a big disappointment to me that, you know, like, I don't understand what they're doing. And I also think that this show could have done a lot more if they had it explained more. It would have been more interesting to a lot more people, and they held back on that. And I think that that was a big mistake.
Well, you and I have both said it, Brian. Ever since we saw Jada stick Rick on the helicopter with the three rings on it.
Yeah.
Ever since we saw Al find the acetate book and the stuff that she found in Fear with the three rings on it.
Right, right.
We've been piecing together bits and pieces about what the Civic Republic, what CRM is and does.
Right.
Even through the episode with Isabel and the helicopter, we got a little taste. We got a few nuggets, but we really didn't get anything past a certain point.
Right.
And when they first started teasing this in World Beyond, we were expecting some big revelation. And they still only have given us the, I won't say the merest dribs and drabs, because they've given us more than we had before. But it's just still been nibbles, tidbits, hints, you know, and I agree with you. I would really like some more information. I think they could have given us more and still not revealed the whole reveal.
Yeah, I mean, if they wanted this show to be a hit, I think that they could have done more by exposing the CRM, not making it like essentially the things that we see about the CRM is stuff that could have been in, you know, webisodes like they had for Fear, you know, back in the day.
Yeah, the like the airline.
Yeah, exactly. They were not worth putting an entire show around.
And I also think that they had a chance to get the regular Walking Dead fans into this harder than they did if they would have used CRM more than a backdrop and a prop, and would have gone ahead and given us something a little meatier to hang on to. Because they basically made CRM was just a backdrop. It was a prop. It was, you know, something they could pull out in the background and wave at us now and again. And I mean, we know more now than we did before, but at the end of the day, we still don't know as much as we want to know.
We still don't know as much as we need to know, for that matter.
Right. And I think from my standpoint, it's kind of irritating. It's something that is definitely enough to annoy someone who's a fan of the show, that I'm not quite to the Ruthie Rubicon. I'm not to the point where I'm saying I'm never going to watch this again.
Oh, well, we have a story about this. So Ruthie has actually been watching it, and she is up to season 10, episode 7 of the main show. So she's actually gone back and watched it. So she's in quarantine right now. So she can't, she was watching it over at her stepmom's place, and with her being in quarantine, she can't go back and finish the season, but until she's done quarantine. But her sister got COVID, so she's in quarantine for like the next 10 days or something.
Ow.
So yeah. But yeah, she's been rewatching it, and she said that, you know, the show was a lot better on binge than it was watching it week by week. So
She actually thought season eight
was pretty good, you know, and she really loved season 9. So, she quit the show altogether.
Right. So. And that's what I was getting at, is that I'm not to that point, but I'm definitely not going to be jumping up and down and buying AMC Plus. If they tell me, oh, well, we're going to have 2 bonus episodes of, you know, World Beyond. Yay. I'll wait till somebody posts a bootleg copy on YouTube or something. I feel I almost feel kind of abused by this. I'm like, guys, I stuck through thick and thin with you guys, and I'm still watching the freaking show. You know, throw me a bone. Give me something.
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing that I was going to say is that, they didn't really play to this like young adult demographic, which they were obviously like targeting the show for. Like, to me, it would have made more sense to play the show at 8 o'clock versus, play it at 10 o'clock. Well, I mean, I guess if they're trying to get 18 to 34, that's fine. But if they're trying to get younger, like a younger audience, like the 14 and like 14 to 34, or whatever that demographic would be, it would have made more sense to put it even earlier. And they didn't do that. And I think that was ultimately a mistake. But I just think that when we get to the ratings, it'll show that the show just, you know, for its finale, it just didn't do very well. So,
well, you would think that they would have learned their lessons of putting something in that Badlands time slot.
Oh, they never do.
But it, you know,
and the only time it's worked, the only time I would say that it's worked has been for, I'd say two times. Well, one for Better Call Saul and one for Fear. So when they had Fear season 4, come back, you know, and they had that crossover thing, I think that really did well for Fear, and the ratings for Fear were up for several weeks after that compared to where they were. But, and Better Call Saul, I think it also helped as well. Better Call Saul, a better show than either of them, but, you know, that's besides the point. But yeah, I mean, all in all, I'm disappointed with this show. You say you're not going to quit. If we're having to cover this show and it's not teamed up with something else, I don't know if I'm going to be a part of it next time. It doesn't resonate with me. And I just found the show to be a disappointment. And it didn't, I'd say maybe one episode met my minimum of 7 out of 10 to stay podcasting on it. And this particular finale, these two episodes didn't make it. I gave it a 6.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's just not worth my time, and I'll be interested in it. You know, if it gets good, I'll give it a shot, I guess, but I just don't know if I want to cover it next season. We'll see. But is there anything else that you didn't say?
No, I think we have fairly beaten the dead horses as much as we need to beat them.
Yeah, I would agree. Okay, so Kyle will have things to say, and we'll have him put them in here, I guess.
Yep.
Okay, so I basically, like, I'm just going to replay kind of what me and Brian recorded, and because they talked pretty much a lot of the same points that I was going to bring up. But kind of, we had a little fun our first day recording, so I just figured I'd just put this in here. So you'll hear some of the same stuff that Brian already said, but then I have my reactions and then some of my, like, well, I go off a little bit on some things about the show. So here, I will add that here.
So I think we've decided to rate this together as one lump. Right? So
yes. Well, you gave it a notch more than I did, but all right. Well, I give it a 5 M's because it seems everyone on the show decided to drop it and call it the CR. M's.
And there were some good things about these episodes, but I mean, I always tell people that a show has to maintain a rating for me of a 7 for me want to cover it. And for this show has been steadily in the 3 to 6 range, and I don't think it's gotten much higher than maybe a 6.5. So I'm giving this one a 6. Are these people dumb? and when I ask that question, I'm asking that question about the CRM. I'm also asking that question about hope. I'm asking that question basically to everyone who is in the show right now, because they're acting really dumb. The things that I'm seeing on this show just make no sense to me. It's like, I'll get into that later, because we're not really going to do any sauces, because we never did any sauces with the show.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're not doing it this time, but, I just don't get these people. I don't get it. The whole idea of the CRM makes no sense to me. Why would you kill off people? Like, if you're going to start a civilization, you need people. It doesn't matter if they're geniuses or they're dumb. Okay. You need people. Okay. You can't have the pandemic has taught us that you need, you know, deliverers just as much as you need professors. Like, you need these people, or else everything comes to a halt. And you can't start a civilization with just a bunch of people. And why would they kill an entire settlement to get out one person? It makes no sense to me.
I know. Oh my gosh, I know. Yeah, I feel like it's like I was about to like, oh no, I gotta let him speak, and I'm like, because it's like that literally was like the end of the season finale was General What's Her Face just being like, oh yeah, I'm like, I haven't told you yet, because but we'll talk later, that I basically just obliterated a whole like basically resource, like you're like, we know that there's like A's and B's, and like there's some system of like pulling people out, like whatever, from the main show. And it was just like, why would you? Like,
I don't get it. I don't get it either. Like,
right.
You know, like put them to work on the farm.
Right.
You
know? And no, like, it's like, but do a fucking Negan and be like, hey, I'm going to be oppressive and you always make my food so that I can feed myself. And it's like, that makes sense. But just be like, hey, we're wiping you out because we wanted to get one girl out, and then that, like, we had to be secretive about it, and like, whatever. It's like, makes zero sense.
Like, did that mean that they wiped out Portland too?
I don't know.
Like, but again, it kills me. It's like, okay, obviously, Hope and Iris are in a muse situation. Okay. So, and it could be a mutual muse situation, but basically, one person makes the other one smarter than the other, and maybe they reciprocate. So they fill each other's they balance each other, and they make each other that much smarter and better. Okay, so but even if they didn't realize that, Iris has qualities that the CRM would need. She's a leader. She's clearly a leader, right? They need leaders, like they need the Rick Grimeses of the world, the leaders to, you know, bring the civilization back. And it's just like, it doesn't make any sense. And another thing about this that doesn't make any sense is that Hope, okay, she may be a genius and she may be this raw talent, but she's not going to be able to do much with it until she learns. So
right. She's not just got, like,
it's years away before she's going to ever really be able to contribute in any great amount. She'll contribute a little bit, but she won't be able to contribute to the same level as her father
right?
Until she's had a chance to learn. And this doesn't make any sense. The whole concept doesn't make any sense.
I just kept yelling at the screen, just be like, so she's an A or B? A or B? What is she? She can't be just be like, I'm smart and they want me and I'm going to save my father, blah, blah. I'm like, I bleep it up. I'm like, there's always been an A or a B. Like, what are you? Because otherwise you're dead. Like, that's it. That's your...
She is a C.
Well, we'll see what her scores were in Omaha, but that was destroyed, so we'll never know.
But anyway, that's the main point of the show to me. And like a guy like Corduroy Boy, what's his name? Elton. You know, another guy, smart guy. You know, so they've got maybe three geniuses that are traveling with them, and you know, Silas doesn't seem like he's all that smart, so he's probably the little guy on the IQ totem pole there. But anyway, so they got, you know, three really smart people that are coming to them. Why don't they just take them and, you know, make them part of their community? You know, I just don't understand the concept of this. The whole concept of the CRM is flawed. Mm-hmm. It's completely flawed.
Agreed.
And that makes the show flawed. It makes the universe flawed. And it makes the whole concept of The Walking Dead on TV right now flawed.
Yes. Goodness. I mean, I'm like, that was one of the things that I obviously been covering the fear. And so I was trying to like come in and like watch the show and like this and that, but it you guys kind of took off with your notes and I'm like, okay, cool. But it was like the first time to actually sit down. I'm like, oh, I have nothing else but to watch World Beyond. And I just remember looking at my husband and like, wait, I'm like, Andrea had to kill her sister after being bit, you know? And it's like, that's a huge thing that you have to do. You know, it's like, you know, Carl shot a kid in the face. You know, I'm like these kids have done nothing but just live in like dormitories.
Didn't Carl get shot in the face? Isn't that more?
Well, yes, but he shot some other kid in the face first. So I guess karma, as I talked in this episode. But I mean, but at the same time, it's like, that's the part that I was having a hard time with. It's like, we've seen the realities of this universe on such an extreme on one end that this show, like literally, like it just seemed to like skip over. It's like, yeah. You know, I'm like, I mean, like Elton was like wrapping up walkers in fishing line, and that was enough to bring them down. And I was like, oh, you don't have to worry about it. It's like, wait, I thought you guys were being trained on how to actually deal with walkers. And
Ronco's pocket fisherman.
Yes. I
remember those things. I even had one of those things.
Yeah.
But
and I know, but I mean, it's the same thing. It's like the reality that we've seen as fans of the show from the universe, and this is what we're saying. It's like, this universe needs to also include the world beyond. And this is 10 years after the fact. And like, we're not seeing that. And it's like, these kids, like, or this, the episode, it's like, okay, they don't have to face any walkers, or they do. And it's like, it's literally like, oh, I can just bump them and then they fall over. And they're like, oh, I just like knock them down. It's like, no, we've seen people being ripped apart in 2 seconds because they didn't react fast enough. And at least on that part, I'm like, I'm having that's where I'm like having my issues. We're just, I can't deal with the fact that Carl can shoot some kid in the eye and then Rick's like putting him down like, oh, that's bad. Don't do that. And then these guys are like, I mean, Hope got a freaking like rock on a stick that like never falls off and it's literally held together by like some like leather bands. And then she only used it twice that I've seen this whole entire season. Like that would not be a weapon that would like stand the test of time unless you're not using it, which she seems to use it for, you know, decoration. All right.
We're just going to now do a little bit of news and specifically their ratings.
Started, it was just a couple weird stories on the news.
That's the long version. Okay, so between Kyle and LT sitting down for the last two nights, ratings came in on Wednesday morning for this two-part finale, and it got a 0.15 in the 18 to 49 with 618,000 viewers. That is down in the total number of viewers and the same in the rating. Last week, it got a 0.15 with 627,000 viewers. In the 18 to 34, it was slightly better. It got a 0.08 versus a 0.07 last week. But this is a first, okay? Talking Dead, which was on after World Beyond, its ratings didn't even make the top 50. So to give you an indication of that, Weekend Recharge on the Weather Channel was at number 150 this week with 194,000 viewers. So it doesn't necessarily mean that the number of viewers were lower, but certainly the total was lower. And okay, I got a wrong answer. It said that it didn't air on the linear network, just on the AMC streaming service.
That is correct.
Oh, it didn't air?
No, sir.
Oh, why didn't you stop me then?
Hell, I thought you knew.
No, I didn't know.
Yeah, I was kind of pissed about that too.
That the
boneheads at AMC for the freaking season finale ran Talking Dead on Plus.
I see. Okay. Well, Kyle, don't take that out. We'll just say to that, as far as Brian getting that wrong, he was
incorrect.
Borrowing something from the Star Trek podcast. Or I could use, actually probably deserve both of them for getting that wrong. But yeah, so that's it. And as far as Parrot Analytics, nothing really changed from last week. In the Parrots, The Walking Dead was not in the top 10. So it stays out of the top 10 for, I think, the second week in a row. And this is not completely unexpected. So it'll probably come back in when the show comes back in February, but not until then. But that's okay, because we have World Beyond to keep our attention.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So as far as news is concerned, Fear the Walking Dead, which it's kind of funny that we called it Fear the Walking Dead, even though we don't have any show of Fear the Walking Dead to cover this week other than Aaron feedback. But it has been renewed for season 7.
Yep.
So might want to play celebration music or something.
Well, I guess, we might as well have something that's just going to be like, hey,
Scott Gimple, you get a new showcase. Andrew Chambliss and Ian Goldberg, you get a new showcase. 16 episodes of Zombie Merriment. I don't know. Is it another 16 episode season, or did they say?
No, everything I saw that was just basically, it was like they're in their pre-writing stage, but he did confirm it's like, yes, there is going to be season 7. So I would assume that's like a full season 7 that we know. So it's like there's going to be the first half and the back half, like 16 episodes, 18 episodes. I don't know. Like, we've got the extras for The Walking Dead coming up. So I'm assuming this is obviously into 2021, possibly. So
yeah,
It's good, but it's good because I think a lot of the things that were like talked about was, or just, you know, speculated was like, okay, well, we're going to get through season six. And then it's like, oh, there's going to be like, what's going to be left over? Or like, where are we going to end with this? And it's like, you know, there's still more story to tell. And is this also going to like kind of run into parallel with the movie or the main show? And like, are we all going to come together and like be on the same timeline? Are we going to have those kind of, you know, it's like having another season. Good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I am happy with the direction that the show has taken in season six.
I agree.
It has been so much better than season five. I think season five was at an all-time low, even lower than my favorite. Morgan falls asleep in the back of a semi and wakes up in Mississippi. But anything would be better than that, I think. Yeah. And
I think that's going to allow them to actually maybe like tie more stuff together, maybe kind of like push into whatever thing. Like, because like we talked about the world beyond and how, like, you know, this is, it's like, where does this all fit in the same universe? And it's like, where is this going? The movies are definitely like a big part of it. It's like, maybe this gives another like step to being able to like basically bring the whole entire universe together from all the shows, and then maybe like have one, because we still have the, you know, like the assuming that we're going to have the Daryl and Carol spinoff, we're going to have the, you know, the Walking Dead, you know, like their anthology part of it, you know, like where they're just like picking up different characters, which I think I read something that was like Kim Dickens. And Gimple says something that's like that, you know, we could learn more about her story too, which would be interesting to see after the fact that we already know what's going on, where that like what that would be. So I don't know. We'll see. It's just, I'm glad. I'm like, I've fear this year in this season. It was like they went a different way and it actually played off. I don't care about last episode was like not the best or whatever. But we had COVID, we had the pandemic, we had a lot of stuff that like threw stuff in the gears and like made issues. But overall, the direction that they were going was very, very, very good and entertaining. And it was something that we all really, I think, needed. So,
yeah. Yep. Last thing is that it has been confirmed that the zombie apocalypse was not caused by a space borer.
Yes. I thought that was funny too, because it was in the same article about like Gimple basically saying it's like there's a season seven. And actually, I tried to go back and I was like looking through like the episodes and trying to like find this, and I just didn't have enough time, but I didn't see it. But it's funny because if you've read the comics, you know that the comic book, issue number 75, there was a whole deal where Kirkman was basically saying, hey, I am like tired of the haters saying like, oh, it's like, there's, I don't know. It's just like, I don't like you, like I'm doing this and like all like you want, like you're not interested in this or you're like giving me like bad feedback or whatever. So he's just like, so what if I did? It's like, here's the whole aliens coming down. They were the ones that caused it. And it literally was like what I think it was like. No. And it's like, so Rick was basically like, I think knocked out by Michonne or something. That was like, because he was like arguing with this was like, I think during the time whenever they were at like Alexandria, but it was just like, he got knocked out. And then he had this whole dreamscape where it's like, oh, aliens came down and everybody's like in all these like suits and they're fighting like these aliens that were like the ones that caused everything. And they were fighting for the humanity and blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. It was just kind of funny that they were just like, oh, they like kind of threw this in as just being like a nod to the comics. But when I read the article, it also seemed like that it was, I think Gimple and like not necessarily, well, I guess maybe the showrunners, like whoever was doing filming the episode or the director of the episode, like threw that in there and they didn't really realize it until after the fact. And so now they're responding to it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so it was kind of like, oh, no. It's like, yeah, this is just an Easter egg, blah, blah, blah. But I think they kind of let things get away from them and whoever was directing it. And, you know, like how, you know, I'm sure if it was possible during beginning of COVID, like then they're just like, oh, like they just threw that in there and the writer put it in there and they never like caught it. But I mean, regardless, okay, fine. That's fine.
Was that in the Huck flashback?
I think so.
Must have been, right?
Because it's the only Marines that we would have seen having any kind of more dialogue.
Yeah.
So I think that probably was. I tried to go back and I was like, didn't have a chance to really like dig down. So.
I remember something about it, but it didn't really register in me at the time. So.
Yeah. Well, they came out and paid it. Oh, it's an Easter egg. That's just a nod to the comics. And so. Yes, the ZA is never going to be known of how it happened. I think that was kind of basically the end of the story. It's mm-hmm. not a space bore. It's not like even Kirkman is just like, oh, he even joked about it on Twitter back when this was a thing. It's just like, we're never going to know. And that's not the point anyway. So,
yeah. All right. That is it for news this week.
All right. All right. Well, to interact with us, we encourage you to follow us on Twitter, and you can find us at WalkingDeadTTM. You can also find us at Instagram on the same handle. To submit your theories and feedback, most people post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, and you can find that at facebook.com/groups/WalkingDeadTTM. Email us at WalkingDead@talkthroughmedia.com, and also we have a feedback form at talkthroughmedia.com/feedback, or you can call 216-232-6146. Leave us a voicemail. We definitely love to have voicemails, and you can just call that number, and that's the best place to do it. All of our new episodes are on YouTube. Just search for Talk Through Media, and remember to subscribe and click the bell to get the notifications when we have new videos.
One thing you can do is like and review our Talk Through Media Facebook page at facebook.com/talkthroughmedia. You can write a review for the whole network or just a particular podcast there. Help us out by doing that. And if you subscribe to, well, hopefully you subscribe to us on whatever podcast client that you use. Certainly subscribe to us on YouTube. If you do that, smash that bell. As they say, smash that bell. But similarly, like Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast client, make sure that you subscribe so that you get the episodes when they come out. And if your podcast client has that capacity, please help us out by writing us a rating or review. It has been a while since we've gotten a review for this or any of the podcasts within the Talk Through Media Network. It's been a while since we've gotten any reviews, so help us out. I think the last one we got was for Star Trek Discovery, and it was in October. So Apple Podcasts has it, Stitcher has it, and there's also podchaser.com where you can leave us a review. Share our posts on Twitter and Facebook when they come out, of course, and tell a friend. That's one of the best ways you can help us by sharing, you know, the podcast. And of course, Kyle and I had done a season of Star Trek Lower Decks. If you haven't had a chance to watch that, please watch that. That is a part of the Star Trek Discovery podcast feed. And my former host on this show, Ruthie, has actually just is currently doing now a watch finally of The Walking Dead. She is on season 10, episode 5. So maybe nice. We'll get her on to talk about it. I don't know.
Hopefully.
We'll see. But anyway, so yeah, she's finally watching The Walking Dead again. And whether or not she watches Fear again, I don't know, but we'll see. But yeah, it's, Ruthie and I are currently covering Star Trek Discovery, and it's been a great season so far. There have been 7 episodes of a 13-episode season so far, so we've got 6 to go. So we're going all the way through until past New Year's Day. So, yeah, so that you can get at StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast.com or TalkThroughMedia.com. You'll see the links there. So, and of course, there's a Facebook group for that at Facebook.com/groups/StarTrekTTMPodcasts with the S. And we have a Patreon as well. That's patreon.com/Brian and Ruthie.
All right. Well, we are going, well, I guess it's actually going to be a while until we actually find out when Fear of the Walking Dead starts back up again, but it'll be Fear of the Walking Dead season 6, episode 8. As far as we know, it'll be sometime after The Walking Dead, which does come back on the 28th of February. So sometime in April. We don't know how it was written by or directed by. Like, I scoured everything to find out what's going, like, if we had any idea of, like, what is even been planned, but yeah, they're going to let us know. World Beyond, well, they already told us basically after the episode, it was like sometime in 2021. So we'll leave it at that.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like eventually, at least in theory.
I don't know if they've actually have any of that already done. They already shot it and they just have to put it together, or if they're still filming. Everything I could find was like they had already gotten most of this done. But yeah, I think they're probably going to possibly do this in the fall.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if they team it up with The Walking Dead.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. It was kind of like, hey, we'll just push it off until the fall. And yeah, hopefully everything will become normal after the pandemic. And, you know, it's like they've had the time to be able to reshoot or like do whatever they want. But it's like, you know, Walking Dead will hopefully come back in October like we're used to. Then there'll be the break. Maybe that's when World Beyond will hit. And then Walking Dead second half, if we get season 11 is around that time, and then Fear will come back in the summer and fall, whatever. So we'll see.
Yep, we'll see.
Yep. All right, so until next time, I'm Brian. Or no.
you gotta leave that
I gotta in. Leave that in there. All right, so until next time, I'm Kyle.
And I'm Brian.
And I'm LT.
And this is Fear of the Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everyone.
Good night. That was fun.